Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to I'm Just Saying. I'm Carla G., your hostess. Today the broadcast is coming to you Thursday, November 12, 2009. And I would like to consider this show a special broadcast because, folks, our guest today is associated with a show that debuted here in America in 2002. I think it airs pretty much the season is like January to May, and this show blazes past its competitors when it's on. Of course, I'm talking about everyone's guilty pleasure, American Idol. And today, I'm proud and honored to have the man behind the music on American Idol, ladies and gentlemen, American Idol's music director, Mr. Ricky Miner. Yay! Hello, Ricky.
Hey, bum-ba-da-dum-ba-bum.
So there you go. How are you doing this morning?
Doing really well.
Great, great. Well, I greatly appreciate you taking the time to come on today. Many, many thanks to you. And since I know that you are a busy man, we're just going to just jump right into it. Just going to go head on starting out. The first thing that I think that a lot of people wonder about is what exactly is the definition of a music director?
Well, I think, you know, it's kind of self-explanatory, but the person who is in charge of the music and making the decisions regarding all things concerning music, and hopefully having some clear direction on what needs to be done, how it needs to be done, and be able to deliver that in a timely manner.
Mm-hmm. And now, while your position on the show is not that of a producer, is it?
No.
You don't have any producing titles on American Idol?
No, none of that one.
Okay, all right. What is the difference, though, because I know you have been a producer, you do produce music. What's the difference between directing and producing when it comes to music?
Well, when it comes to music, I mean, a music director is generally what is, you know, handles the music department on, say, a said television show. A producer's responsibility is the overall content. So it could be anything from the concept of not only what songs, but how the songs are presented and having a theme. Let's just say there's a television special that I create about the music of the Gershwins, and it's my concept to do that, and then how to do it, where to shoot it, what artists are on the show. So that involves producing the show and dealing with the set design, lighting, location. So it's a lot more than being responsible for the music, which is a lot already.
Right, right. Okay. So there's similarities between that and film and television as far
absolutely.
As, you know, the actual tasks. Yeah, yeah. Well, now, generally speaking, now, do you have to, do music directors, do you have to audition to be a music director, or you pretty much just apply for the job?
The guys who get that kind of work have go through, you know, what is a, I guess, a natural progression of being musicians to having some skills at arranging and being a leader and knowing, you know, who to call in various situations. Mine happened from being music director for Whitney Houston for 10 years, and prior to that had worked with Al Jarreau and Gladys Knight and the Pips and Lou Rawls and other artists as a musician, and doing television shows with Whitney and these other artists. Other production companies notice, you know, that you do a good job, and they call and see if you're interested in doing a small show with a couple of acts, and that kind of grows, and your reputation grows, and from that point, it's the production companies as well as the networks, as well as the artists. There's a comfort factor if they have a certain a music director that they've worked with before that's on the show. I mean, I'm music director for the Grammys as well. And so having worked in the industry for as long as I have, for 30 years, you make a name for yourself, either positive or negative. So I think it's just up to you to be consistent, you know, and,
right.
and delivering good product.
Right, right. Well, obviously you're doing this, obviously, which is great. Now, you're a young guy. You're relatively young guy. Let's put
relatively, it yeah, yeah. You said relatively.
Let's
yeah.
put relatively in there and make it a bad thing, right?
No, that's all right.
No, but well, like I said, I know that you have worked for Whitney, and I've been reading everything else and all the others that you've worked for. But now, when you started, because about how old were you when you started playing your first instrument? And
14 years old. I'm a bass 14. Player, and I started when I was 14 years old. Not unlike other kids, I had role models in music and things that I loved, and music was it. And my role model at that time was the Jackson 5, and I was in a little singing group. We tried to emulate the Jackson 5, and I sang Jermaine Jackson's parts. So when it came time to learn an instrument, that's the instrument that I chose.
Okay. But you know to play a few other instruments at this point, yes?
Yeah, piano. I mean,
piano.
just enough to write, you know, just enough to compose. And that's,
and you're self-taught, you know. Too, right? Or
No. I went to UCLA.
Oh, okay.
I studied privately. For many years, and still study, still take lessons, still, you know, because it's one of those things where you have to constantly work on your skills. I mean, or else there's so much with technology, and there are different ways to do it, you know.
Well, we'll get into that, and we'll figure out how do you have the time to do what you're doing. But now let's just kind of go into American Idol here. Now, the season or the auditions have already started for American Idol. Is that correct?
Yes.
As far as, yeah, okay. And so now that the auditions are underway, when exactly do you start your work on
well,
the
you know,
program?
The auditions,
or do you ever stop?
Well, I don't stop. What happens, the auditions have happened already, and now it's a matter of the green mile is what they call it, and that happens in January, and the contestants will be narrowed down to the top 24, and I start the middle of February. So what happens is January, the auditions happen and everyone watches that. And then when February rolls around, that's when we become involved.
Okay. All right. So right now what are you doing right now? What do you do now when you're not doing the show?
Probably, you know, the same thing I did before I started doing the show, which is just a lot of work, a lot of television right now. I just finished as music director for Carrie Underwood 2-hour special that airs November 30th, I think on Fox or wherever. I don't know what the exact date on locally where it airs in various states around the country. And then I just finished producing a Jennifer Hudson special, which I'm working on now. That'll air, I think, in December twice, I think around the 12th and around the Christmas Eve, with her coming back to Chicago and coming back to her hometown. And so it's a lot of great performances. And so we're editing that right now. And I'm doing this show, Home for the Holidays, which airs on CBS. This is my 11th year, a show about adoption and how important it is. And there's always music performances. And this year it's Carrie Underwood, Faith Hill, Mary J. Blige, Shakira, Reba McEntire. So it's a a star-studded show always, and that films this next week.
Okay.
Friday, and I'm conducting an orchestra for Carrie Underwood on CNN Heroes.
See?
That's on Saturday.
Yeah,
it doesn't stop. Saturday. And then I'm producing the entertainment for the state dinner for the White House.
Wow.
On the 24th. So there's always a lot of projects like that are happening. I just did I do stuff for television, for film, for Oprah, working on a film project for Lifetime. So it's always year-round. And then, you know, as music director for the Grammys, I generally work on the Super Bowl. I've worked on 9 Super Bowls producing the music for the pregame and a couple of times for halftime. So, you know, you never know. That's usually artist-driven. You know, like this past year I did Jennifer and Faith Hill for the Super Bowl, producing the national anthem and America the Beautiful. And so there's always, you know, those things, the Grammys, Clive's Grammy Party, you know, there's so many other shows. And I'm also a producer for the Image Awards, which is in March this year. And so there's so, you know, there's always a lot of other television show, television specials. As executive producer of the Divas, that happened in October this year. Next year we're bringing it back a little earlier, possibly April, May. So that kind of work starts like 6 months out, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So the thing that I want to ask you now is, do you know what day it is? You know,
right. Well, you know,
there's so much going on.
No, it is. It is. It really is. And I think that, you know, you have to just, I make notes, you know, I'm like, in that sense, I make a checklist nightly, you know?
Yeah.
And I think
I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, I just think that that's really important to stay on top of your schedule and your, you know, and I make a timeline for each project. So I know when my deadlines are, and sometimes, you know, but I'm not, the key with all of this is not being afraid to delegate and really building a strong team around you. It's like any popular sports team. To win, it's not a solo effort, you know. So for me, I have to reach out to get help in all these shows. I couldn't do it by myself. So I have a staff of arrangers and copyists and musicians and, you know, working with various artists. I mean, you have everything from Herbie Hancock to Hannah Montana and everything in between. So when I work on these projects and produce, you know, I produce a tribute show to Herbie Hancock, and I put together Miley Cyrus's tour, and you know, worked with the band and made sure that all the arrangements were great. And so it really takes time.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you. Let's ask it this way then. And going back to say American Idol, you got to go to work today. So what time do you get up, and, you know, when you eat your breakfast, and do you have time to read a newspaper and Variety? And
yeah,
you know, set for
I do subscribe to Variety, and I do kind of check and see what's going on, because, you know, it's like it's the news for the entertainment world. So it's you can't live in a bubble and be active in especially in the business world.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always working on that, making sure that I'm conscious of what's going on. But my mornings start pretty early, and they go pretty late. But I don't really require much sleep, because I'm always, you know, I mean, I haven't slept in over 30 years, because I'm always thinking about music. I mean, even when I don't want to, I mean, I'm hearing a song in my head. I mean, I've been asked by Quincy Jones and Lionel Richie to produce the 25th anniversary of We Are the World, which is, that happens in January. So this is a project that basically 2 months from now will happen. And so I'm moving each project a little forward. So last night I worked till around midnight, just pouring through all of the video, audio, and paperwork from 25 years ago, you know, because it's important to understand what was done before, so that you can have a clear idea of where you want to take it. And I think a lot of times people think, well, I'm going to come in and I'm going to do my thing. And until you can really understand what was done, then you can find a way to make it, you know, great and unique. But you have to understand the material. So even like the Idol kids, you know, I really impressed upon them to learn the song. I mean, don't take liberties and change the melody until you learn the melody.
Right, right. Now, and speaking of Idol kids again, you have to work with each one of them separately? obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or okay, who did are you? So, as the music director, then you're the one that determines the music theme or the libraries that they're going to choose from.
No, that's determined. The producers of Idol, along with the network, and with my I'm part of that team to look at the themes for the year and try to decide that prior to the season starting. So we pretty much know what we're going to do going into the season. You know what I mean? It's not
mm-hmm.
it's not like we don't make it up as we go. We know that this is going to be Rock Week. This is Beatles Week. This is American Standards. This is, you know,
right.
whatever the music genre is, Elvis Week. So we know that going into the season, and we try to mix it up a little bit. Songs of the 60s, Year You Were Born. I mean, all kinds of various themes.
Right.
And then,
right.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and so when do you have the time to rehearse those individually?
Well,
shows that you're doing.
Yeah, the schedule, I'll give you a quick overview of the schedule. Basically, on a Sunday, the contestants get a list of the categories for the following week. So, you know, the songs that they're singing this week, they've already determined and we've already worked that out. But on a typical Sunday, they'll get a list and they'll start looking through songs and listening to songs. And finally, when they determine what the songs are, what song they want to do, they bring it to us. I have two associate music directors who are pianists and two vocal coaches assigned, and I assign the contestants, split them in half, and assign them to these people to work with, and they help them figure out what key and what where to cut the song and where to start it and all. Then all of that comes to me, and either I go in and meet with them or I make suggestions and send an email to them saying, you know, you should start, the key seems a little high to me, you should start, this is how I think the arrangement should be, and they have my contact information so they can
mm-hmm.
respond, you know, and kind of if they have an idea, they can bring it to me, and I'll let them know what I think, and then the bottom line is they're the ones that are performing it, so it
right.
should, you know, they have to be able to say, I want it slower, I want it faster, I'd rather do it with just piano, I want the whole orchestra in, you know, and that helps them to shape how they perform,
right.
you know.
Right, okay. Well, also, I would imagine then that the workload changes as the season progresses forward, as you get closer to the finale, simply because there's fewer contestants.
No.
Do you, no? Okay.
No, not at all. Because
okay,
see, what happens?
Worse, huh?
No. I mean, it's the finale is the bear, because you're doing a regular show weekly, not being able to really focus. I mean, say with the Grammys, we have a couple of months generally to put together one big night. This is
mm-hmm.
putting together one big night while doing, you know, a couple of big shows every week, and not having the kind of time to really focus on, because there are a lot of guest artists, so you have to speak to artists, managers, publicists, you know, and record companies. So, and that's four people, you know, or four different entities per artist times, you know, 12 or 13 artists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's quite a bit.
So
that's quite a bit.
Yeah.
Well, going back to something you had said earlier about the time that you have, you were saying that you don't sleep a lot, or you don't require a lot of sleep. And actually, that statement just made me think of Michael Jackson. And so I was actually glad to hear you say that, because that will help people understand, you know, you being a real musician. When you have this music in your head, I imagine it will be very difficult to sleep.
I think it's a difference between not being able to sleep and not requiring a lot of sleep. I mean,
mm-hmm.
My personality is a really I've never been a sound sleeper. I don't have an alarm clock. and I wake up because I know I have something to do, and it's just me, though. I mean, some people have other ways. I do a lot of I walk every morning. I go to the gym, so I have a program. I mean, it's not all work, and I generally don't work weekends unless I'm taping a show. So it's important to be able to turn it off and balance, and so I've always been an early riser, and so for me to being in bed till 7 is sleeping in, you know.
Yeah.
But I just wake up and I go for a morning walk, and that's where I get my kind of meditation time, walking, peaceful, it's quiet. And then I come back home. And my a general day for me, though, is, say, 10 a.m. to 7. I usually go to dinner with my wife. I go to the movies. We have date night. I mean, so it's a balance. You have to balance your life because you're not interesting. So you have nothing interesting to write about. You have nothing, because all you know is notes and music. So you have no conversations. You have no interaction with people. And that's 50% of my job is how to interact with other people, how to work with other people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I am glad to hear you also talk about, getting some exercise and
oh, you have to.
Family time.
You know?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. I mean,
a
lot of people, people who are successful in business are very unhappy because they have no life outside of, that's really the only thing that they can talk about is music, or they want to talk about. And I love music, and I'm thankful for what it's done for me, but it's not who I am. It's what I do.
Mm-hmm. So when you're not talking about music, what's your next favorite thing to be talking about?
I love cooking, and I love gardening. So I love to be out, I have I have succulent garden, rose garden, herb garden, and I love trimming and cutting and pruning trees, and so that's where and I do enjoy just listening to music without having to work, just letting music play and grilling and spending just time and reading. I love to read.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
I could easily, I don't watch much television. I do enjoy going to see movies when they come out. There's something about that experience of watching seeing a new movie just released and forming your own opinion rather than waiting for the critics. So I love the movies. So that's kind of how I balance myself. And then I love just meeting interesting people from other walks of life, that have a different take on life and a different career path.
Yeah. So wonderful. let's just talk about your creative process. When you're creating a song or putting together a show, do you visualize in musical notes, or do you visualize images and you try to match a note to it? I don't know if that question makes any sense.
Not yet. Say it again.
I'll say it to you this way. Well, the question was, when you're creating, do you visualize in notes, or do you see an image?
I got it now.
An actual picture image and to it.
When I'm arranging, my first thing to the artist who I'm working with is, how do you want the people listening to feel?
Mm-hmm.
If the emotion is I want to bring them in, I want to be able to tell the story and in a way that really touches them, or I want them to feel, I want them to dance,
Mm-hmm.
So the music should be happy. I want horns, I want this. So then I understand what you're trying to convey. My job as an arranger is a total support. It's not about the arrangement. I've thrown out, I can't even count the number of arrangements that I've done and thrown out because it didn't hit the mark. It didn't support what the artist needed or what they could convey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean,
let me just interject something real quick here. When, if you don't mind, if you say the arrangements, going back to American Idol, do you do the arrangements, you said, or no?
Yeah, I have a team of about 15 people, so I'm involved in every arrangement. And there's several things. Time is a factor, and then the best person. If I'm not the best person to do that style of arrangement, then I don't do it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So, but I understand what needs to happen, and there are arrangements that I do or someone else does, and it doesn't hit the mark. You know, maybe maybe the strings are too busy. Maybe the instrumentation is too thick. You know, maybe the arrangement has too much going on. So that's what I mean by too thick. It's like, you know, there's horns going, there's string parts going, the drums are doing this, percussion's doing, you know, piano's doing this. It's just too much. So I'll thin it out to where it's just piano, and then the strings come in. And if the strings come in and they're too much, then I'll thin out what they play and say, when it gets to this part, instead of having movement, hold a single note across. You know what I mean? So it's looking and listening to what that arrangement is making you feel.
Right. Okay. Well, I only ask that because I know a few times in watching the show, I think it's been Mr. Cowell that has offered up a comment about not liking the arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wondered, now, why is he saying that? Now, I personally wondered, well, who has done the arrangement? Is it you? Is it, you know, are you reading the music simply, playing somebody else's music?
Right. In that case, you know, everyone has their reason why they don't like something. For most cases, when there's been a comment like that, the arrangement has been dictated by the artist, and we've tried to talk them out of it, but they want to do it that way.
Right.
You know, so the arrangements, all the arrangements are my responsibility. So I mean, I take the. You know, you have to take the bitter with the sweet. Not everyone's going to like it. In some cases, I may have liked the arrangement, and sometimes I think it's hard to articulate what you didn't like. But maybe, you know, let's just say an artist wanted an arrangement. They wanted it very soulful, but they can't sing soulful. So the arrangement is instead of saying, you know, you can't sing soulful, it's I don't like the arrangement for you. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so, and if someone wanted to sing jazzy, you know, you're a rock singer, or vice versa. You know, you're a kind of a jazz type singer, and you're trying to do rock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's rock week, so you got to do a rock tune. But the arrangement didn't suit you. You couldn't pull it off. You didn't have the swagger it took to pull off that kind of arrangement.
Right. Do you think, I guess it's safe to ask you this, do you think that an artist, do you think that any of these contestants that come on American Idol really have to be able to sing every genre in order to have a successful career?
Well, I think it's clear.
Do you think that's imperative?
I think it's clear that it's not. I think it's clear that no one artist, and most artists that I work with, say, I'm glad I never had to go through that competition because I'd be voted off. And these are very successful artists in their genre. I mean, you look at Carrie Underwood, who is like, you know, a megastar in country, and she didn't do as well in disco or six songs of the 70s, or, you know. And so when you look at a situation like that, you understand. But I think it does give America a chance to see how versatile that person is. And I think, I think it only makes you stronger to have appreciation. Doesn't mean you have to be an expert in all these genres, but it does help you to learn standards, great songs, because a great song is a great song. I don't care when it's written. So understanding that really kind of, and maybe it helps to define what is the best genre for you.
Okay.
Because, you know, I think in some cases, some artists may not think that that they should go into one particular genre, and then they find a genre that they love and that the fans respond to on the show. So I think it's a good thing, you know, to challenge them. Or otherwise, someone would work in their strong suit the whole time, and and another artist may not even have a strong suit yet. So there's no way to level the playing field.
I gotcha. Okay. Well, that clarifies something for me.
Yeah, because you think like 1 week is country week, so the people who sing country were going to do well, but then the next
right.
week it's soul week, and so now the people who sing soul will get an opportunity to show, you know, or whatever that genre is, rock
right.
or what have you.
Yeah, all right. All right, well, still back on American Idol. As the director, are you also responsible for selecting the members of the band?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah,
I
have a music contractor, and you know, again, I've been doing this a long time, and he's been doing it even longer.
Right.
And so we work together to not only hire the best musicians and singers available, but we also make an effort to spread the work around and use different people. Because everyone brings something different and there's not a lot of work around, so spreading the work seems to be the, for me at least, the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then you mentioned contractor. So is your, because I know you've been in charge of a lot of programs there at the Kodak Theater. Is your contract with American Idol? Is it with Fox? Is it with the Kodak Theater? Can you tell us?
Well, yeah. I mean, it, you know, I'm an independent contractor, so I work independently. I'm not under contract with any company or entity exclusively. And the television shows are per season. The contracts are dealt per season, and that's, you know, how people are able to negotiate and renegotiate a deal. Because their deal was based on a 2-year deal or annual deal. So all that's different. And the Kodak just happens to be one of the major houses, television production houses in Los Angeles. So I just happen to do a lot of shows there. And, you know, and it's actually been a lot of fun because then you get to know the staff and the,
mm-hmm.
and the manager of the Kodak. And so it's always nice to go. It feels like home. Because
okay.
you know, I've been there quite a bit, and you know, but with CBS, with Staples Center, with other venues around town, after a while, you pretty much hit them all. You know, if you
mm-hmm.
if you're fortunate to be consistent with work.
Right, and yeah, and you certainly have. We are running. I'm not sure how long you expected to be here, but. I'm mentioning now that we are about 30 minutes into this. And I just want to mention, folks, you're listening to I'm Just Saying. I'm Carla G. Our guest today is Ricky Miner, who is the music director of American Idol. And he is sharing some very fascinating information with us. Thank you very much. Let's just segue now into – actually, let me back up for 1 second. You mentioned that you started out with Whitney Houston. And so I'm sure there's a lot of folks out there that would like to know how you got that. You said you started playing music at 14, and then at what point did you realize, oh, gee, I really want to make this a career, or did you just sort of luck into it?
Well, you know, I
the
have
career part of it.
Yeah. Well, I have a book out now called "There's No Traffic on the Extra Mile,"
mm-hmm.
and it's a memoir, self-help book, and it basically talks about how to get out of your own way. You know, can't get what you want, maybe you're not ready for it, is a chapter, blinded by arrogance. And so
mm-hmm.
it's kind of a walk through how I started in the business and how I build relationships and that sort of thing. And various ways and lessons that I learned along the way, the various ways that you can really take yourself out of the project, that you're really the only thing that can stop you. Everything
right.
else, you know, you if you get out of your own way, there's nothing else that really can stop you.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
I started playing at 14. I received a scholarship to UCLA in math, computer science, and I had my own band at 16, and worked with that band, and to my junior year of college, all during that time, I played with a lot of bands around town, big bands, small groups, wedding bands, I mean, all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
And people around town got to know my name, and I left school in my junior year, and within a few months got a call to go on tour with Gladys Knight and the Pips.
Okay.
And I went on tour with them, and I met a guy in Boston who was working with Stephanie Mills. He said, I got this girl sings in my church trying to get a record deal. Will you put a band together for her? And by then, I was 22 years old, and that was Whitney Houston. She was 18.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I put the band together here in L.A., and all the record companies passed.
Wow.
Because
okay.
That's not what they were looking for. It was groups, Whispers, Shalimar.
Right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Confunction. It was just, Casey and the Sunshine Band. It was only bands.
Right, right.
And Earth, Wind, and Fire. But not a
mm-hmm.
solo. I mean, what is she going to do?
Right.
You know, so they passed, and we became friends. And a few years later, that guy who was music director passed away, and I became music director for Whitney and
okay.
produced the national anthem for the Super Bowl for her, which was my first one, and
mm-hmm.
worked with her on, anytime she basically opened her mouth to sing. And I left in 99 to start my own production company and do more television in town. And,
mm-hmm.
It's one of those things where you never know for sure, but I think, you have to trust your gut feelings and make – take calculated risk. I mean, you just can't
mm-hmm.
go off on a whim. I'm going to do this. I mean, make sure you do all your research,
Yeah, yeah.
Hold one second.
Sure.
Be right there.
Absolutely. And again, folks, you're listening to I'm Just Saying. I'm Carla G. Our guest today is Ricky Miner, who is the current music director for American Idol. And as he was just saying there, he also has been a music director for acts such as Whitney Houston, getting his start with Gladys Knight. And
others.
And others. There you go. He's back.
He's back, just like that.
He's
yeah. So it's interesting, in working with someone like Whitney Houston, being there from the beginning. And I worked with Brandy. She was 12. Christina
mm-hmm.
was 14, Usher 15, Beyonce 15. So, I've seen and worked with a lot of these artists. I mean, I think Alicia was 20, either 19 or 20 the first time
mm-hmm.
I worked with her. So, I've gotten a really great opportunity to work with a lot of these artists at the beginning of their career and still have a great working relationship with them,
Right, right. Right, that's great. Well, I've been trying to not drop this information because it's really not important, but and I'm not wanting to put you on the spot in any way if you felt that way at all, but I also worked for Whitney back in the day. I was part of the fan club there.
Hello.
with Roy and a few other names that I won't mention because we know who they are. But and so, we have met, and I know you to be a very you're a down-to-earth guy, and I can see that you are helpful I can see how your career has grown, and I'm just happy for you. I'm happy to see what has happened over the last basically almost 20 years. So
yeah, well it is, and time time has flown in that sense. I mean, this is that time when I met Whitney at 22 years old, I mean,
mm-hmm.
so I'm 50 now, and
mm-hmm.
so 28 years now later,
yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's just a natural growth, and I think you have to allow yourself to forgive yourself for making mistakes and not harp on those things,
Mhm. Mhm. All right. And again, so your book is called "There's No Traffic on the Extra Mile," and just one last question about that. What actually prompted you to write that?
I was at American Idol. They did a chicken soup for the American Idol Soul, and I was
mm-hmm.
one of the contributing writers along with Clay Aiken, Ruben Studdard, Jordan Sparks. I mean, a long list of past contestants, fans. and behind the scenes people. And my story was There's No Traffic on the Extra Mile. And I was nominated for an Emmy that year, and I've had three nominations, including this year and last year.
Mm-hmm.
And my story was featured in the Emmy magazine, and a few literary agents contacted me and wanted to represent me and wanted to know if I could write a book. Is there a book to accompany this story? And I said, no, can you write it? And, you know, again, that's a classic thing of I've never done it, but because I haven't done it doesn't mean I can't.
Right.
And I
right.
think a lot of people, you know, like there's a chapter in my book called No Shame in Being Green. A lot of people won't start because they've never done it, and so they're afraid to fail, and they don't think that it's possible for them
mm-hmm.
to do it. Like, I can't do it. And so, again, resources. I'm not a writer, so I hired a great friend to help me lay this out. And so what I did was just talk about the things that were important to me and talk into an interview style and talk into a tape player and have that transcribed and then read
mm-hmm.
it, edit it, change it, and make sure that it had my voice.
Right, okay.
You know, and so there are ways to get it done, and again, you don't have to do everything.
There you go. There you go. That's how you work smart and not hard
yeah.
or something
yeah.
like that, right?
Yeah, yeah, smarter, not harder. That's right.
There you go. There you go. Well, you know what? Like I said, I ran a little bit longer than I was supposed to have. I do appreciate you staying on here with me, and I do appreciate you coming on at all and talking about what's been going on with you.
Well,
and
you're very
I just
welcome.
Repeat,
I appreciate the call.
Thank you. And I just want to repeat three things that you said. You said it's okay to go ahead and take calculated risks. You're delegating power and utilizing resources are some of the methods that you have used to reach your
goal. Well, yeah, and they're key. I mean, there is
mm-hmm.
there's no single person that you view as successful in their life, not just work, but successful
mm-hmm.
and not be able to utilize those tools and understand that if I am leaving, you know, like you can't get something, a new position or a new job, or you can't get something of equal or greater value without giving up something of equal or greater value. Now, that being said, you have to do your homework and understand that there's going to be a transition period, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I prepared for that working with Whitney. I saved up enough money to where I could have a year to build my business and money to invest in my business and to invest in yourself. And it's never too early to invest in you. It's never too late.
There you go. Good words. Good words of wisdom. And so on that note, I will again, I'll promo your book here. It's called There's No Traffic on the Extra Mile, written by Ricky Miner, who is American Idol's music director. Also, if you want to find out anything else about him, you can go to your website, right? RickyMiner.com.
Right.
Yes. And Ricky is RickyMiner.com. Ricky, I do appreciate can't even talk now. I do appreciate you coming on the show here today. And I guess that's it.
All right. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks so much to you, too. All right. Have a good
bye-bye.
One. All right. Bye-bye. Yes, folks, there you have it. Ricky Miner, American Idol. And as I said, you guys might want to take a look at his website, RickyMiner.com. And also look into his book, There's No Traffic on the Extra Mile, which he said is also a bit of a self-help book. I think you will find it pretty fascinating. And beginning, I believe, in January, you can see him on a regular basis on American Idol. But also, he mentioned a couple of programs that will air a little bit later this month, November, Carrie Underwood, and something else. He's got a lot going on. So it's probably listed on his website. Anyway, folks, we're pretty much at the end of the 45 minutes here, and thanks for listening. Not sure if we're going to have a show on Sunday the 15th, but you can always tune in to the show page here, I'm just saying, and see what's happening. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. Take care.